Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. And we're going to go right down to 9.5.1. And this time we do want Trudy Payne. I got it right. Proposed amendments to policy 043, community grant program.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Mayor, Mayor and Councilors. I know that we had just recently brought some amendments to the grants program and sponsorship request policy. What prompted this report, we had did two information grant information sessions to make sure that our community groups were well aware of the updates that were made to the grant policy, and we received some feedback from that workshop from some community groups that were once eligible. And with the particular criteria of having an annual adult membership of $125 or less prohibited them from applying, which we have traditionally provided funding for. And just going through our grant applications, I think more groups are becoming aware that that's making them ineligible. So we are bringing forth a recommendation today, and we'll give some background of that. Recommendation is we're seeking approval to remove the eligible applicant criteria stating membership-based not-for-profit organizations with an annual adult membership of $125 or less from the community grants program and sponsorship request policy. And as I previously stated, groups have been bringing it to our attention that we have traditionally funded has some concerns around that criteria. That we have traditionally sponsored. And some of these are like that's listed in the report is the Bridgewater Curling Club, the Seaside A Capella Group, the DMC Boxing, and the Lunenburg County YMCA are just some that we're aware of that we have traditionally funded. And with this particular criteria, it would eliminate them from applying. The purpose of the community grant program and sponsorship request that's outlined in our policy is to support community organizations that provide cultural, social, heritage, economic, and or recreation programs, facilities, and events that benefits residents. However, and I know it was staff that brought this forth, with the current eligibility criteria, we are, in fact, it is our belief, inhibiting the grant from fulfilling its intended purpose. We actually get a written letter from the Bridgewater Curling Club that I'll forward to council outlining some of the concerns with that particular criteria. The rationale that we brought forth behind including it as part of the eligibility criteria was the understanding was that those that had memberships, that was a way for them to make revenue, and we wanted to try to level the playing field and provide funding to those groups or disperse our funding opportunities to those groups that may not have membership because that would not be a source of revenue. And a good example, I think, when we discussed it was like a community hall typically doesn't have a membership, so they're running a facility, so how could they increase their revenue sources? And our grants perhaps would be better used to disperse to those facilities. Certainly the Bridgewater Curling Club has pointed out that they are a facility and they do charge a membership fee, but the cost to run a facility of that nature is quite expensive. You can imagine in the wintertime trying to refrigerate and keep the ice going, the cost would be quite substantial. So it is true, part of the discussion was that membership fees often prohibit some residents from being part of a group, so that whole public access discussion was had, which means that it's not easily accessible for some members. However, you know, discussing with some of the folks that do run organizations pointed out that the same could be said about registration fees, which many groups and municipal units charge when providing services or programs. So, for example, the municipality could provide a course registration fee for an art program that's $140 because we're trying to balance our cost. And so that is how they were aligning the membership fees. They're charging membership fees to help increase that revenue to help balance their cost. So that's part of the first part of the report is to completely remove it. That's the request. We do have an evaluation criteria that we presented to council, that there's a number of things that in order for them to be eligible and how we rank them, there's a ranking system. We do ask for their budgets and we do ask for their financial statements. So we could, and at the end of the day, particularly with annual operating and major recreation capital, those grants come back to council for final approval. So we'd be still using that evaluation criteria and making sure that there was a financial need, that they were leveraging other dollars, if they're outside of the municipality of the District of Lunenburg, or are they asking their municipal unit for funding as well. So we did go through quite an extensive evaluation criteria that we feel still would be relevant even by removing this particular criteria. The other part of the policy, which was an error on staff's part, and I apologize, is with the major events grant. Our community events grant does not have the eligibility criteria of $125 or less for membership, and that was intentional because these events are meant to bring people to the area, generate revenue, and have spin-offs. It was included by mistake in the major events grant. So we are asking for it to be removed from that particular one, if nothing else, because it will eliminate organizations like the Lunenburg County Lifestyle Center applying for large-scale events, because they, too, charge a membership fee that's over $125. So if we leave it there, then they wouldn't be eligible to apply for a major events grant to offer those, like the Esso Cup, the sledge hockey, some of those bigger events that they've gotten funding for. So that was, we would like for that, at a minimum, to align with our community events grant criteria in order to open that up, because really the purpose of that major event is to provide funding to, exactly as the name implies, those major events that's going to cause significant spinoffs for our municipality. So the strategic plan, we do feel amending the eligible applicant criteria from the community grants program and sponsorship request does align with the municipality's mission of being a sustainable community builders and collaborative engagers. To have sustainable communities, is this necessary? The municipality provide opportunities for financial support to community organizations and events that fill gaps in programs and services that the municipality does not provide. So there are several alternatives. The one is you can leave the grant policy exactly as it is and make no changes. The other is to just remove the eligible criteria from the member from the major events grant only. And the other alternative, I guess it's not really alternative, but to approve the recommendation of staff. Are there any questions? I know we spent a long time on that, and I apologize for coming back with number one an error, but the other reason we brought it back is from feedback that we're hearing from our community organizations, and that grant workshop really sparked it. And then when groups are now looking to make application, if they didn't go to the grant information session, they're saying, oh, I'm no longer eligible. And we anticipate there could be more.
Do you have any questions? Councillor Staton.
I have a question for Trudy, if I might. When you say there's a clause in the grant process, did they ask, you ask if they receive funding from their own municipality?
We do. That's included in our evaluation criteria that was approved.
But it's not a condition of them receiving from us.
Correct. What we had discussed was that they have to show evidence that they have asked. So I'll use an example. If it's a Town of Bridgewater organization that's applying to the municipality for funding, we would have to have evidence that they've asked for funding from the Town of Bridgewater. We did have the discussion that we can't control whether council agrees or not, but a lot of times in my past experience is they were just coming to the municipality for funding and not seeking out, and that's why it was put in the evaluation criteria that they've made the ask.
So we're using the word ask instead of receive?
Correct.
I'm not happy with that. I think if they're in a municipality, they should be getting funding from their own municipality as well as this one. I don't like the fact that we're just asking, did you receive funding? I'd rather see it, did you receive or will you receive funding?
Mayor Balbriggetson?
I guess I'm going to look at that a little different, simply from the perspective that everyone's grant process is different, and they may not have a grant for a specific, we can use a national event, we can use whatever. They may not have that program. So does that mean we do not want to fund that application at all? It may not exist. Like, our grant process doesn't mirror the other municipalities. We have different grants. We would have to look at making our grants specific then to MODL residents, whereas it could be an organization that operates or whatever within the town.
Thank you. Thank you. Councilor Greek, go ahead.
Thank you. My question isn't directly with this policy, but something you had brought up, Ms. Payne. The information events that you held for community organizations, I heard they were very well attended. Thank you for bringing the feedback to us. Is this something that will happen annually now? Or is it just was a one-time thing? Just where it was so well received and perhaps more people missed, didn't have the opportunity to attend, it didn't get on their calendars. I'm just wondering if this will be an annual thing.
I would anticipate that it would be an annual thing.
Okay. Thank you. The other benefit with that is, sorry, may I? Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The volunteer organizations often change roles each year. So if it's a new person in the role applying for grants, to have someone, a place that they could come and answer questions or receive advice is beneficial. And thank you for having those.
Yeah, and from that, you're right that volunteers do change. And it gives me a chance to build relationships. And because of that grant workshop, I probably went and visited and had phone calls from about 25 or 30 organizations. So it was beneficial to the groups for sure, and that's the support that we continue to provide. And hence why we're bringing, this is the feedback that we received. Typically, our criteria was, our basic criteria is that they need to be a nonprofit organization. I do feel if we remove this, that's still the basis, and we have enough criteria and enough evaluation to be able to make the recommendations to council around the annual operating and the major recreation capital, and for and staff to use that at the grants that they can approve. We always have always asked for their budget and their financial statements, so that certainly helps us determine whether there's a need or not.
Sorry, Councillor Haysom.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Trudy. You know, I know we had a pretty big discussion over a number of days about this, and we were trying to anticipate what the impact would be of that membership piece and the limit of $125 for annual membership. It's interesting to see that we are becoming aware of different organizations that would be impacted by that. And I don't think that the intent was to prevent funding for groups like Seaside A Cappella or, you know, what the implications would be for someone like the YMCA. When I first raised an issue with this, for me, it was specifically around capital upgrades for places like yacht clubs, which I think have deeper pockets in terms of developing their space. And my concern also, again, about who is accessing these programs. I am comfortable with removing this membership criteria, membership fee criteria from this policy. But my concern is that, once again, we will be in a position where the policy isn't going to address some of those concerns, and perhaps they just get raised year over year, and that's the way we move forward, because I believe that the intent is not to remove funding from groups such as the ones that you've listed here. So I know that this has been a challenging process to try and figure out this policy. And I do really appreciate the work that's gone into it. And I think it's also important to take that feedback from the groups that we are dealing with and incorporate it. So I appreciate the work that you've put in here. Thank you.
Go ahead, Trudy.
Yeah, and again, just to reiterate, the major recreation capital and the annual operating, which is your bigger ticket grants and your major events for $2,500 or more, would always come back to council. And so a grant is not a rite of passage. A grant is you, council gets the decision to award it or not. We also have other policies like our designated community fund, which we do open to all nonprofits who do not have charitable status. And it was actually the Lunenburg Yacht Club that created that, you know, that sparked the municipality in developing that designated community fund policy, which I know a number, and this municipality was a leader in that, that a number of municipalities has adopted, because that gives them another mechanism to fundraise for those major capital expenditures in a better way. So, in my opinion, removing that membership actually aligns with some of our other policies, like the designated community fund policy. That is another tool that we provide to community groups to fundraise.
Are there any other questions? Oh, Councillor Oikle, go ahead.
Yes, so I'm just wanting to make sure, though, that the criteria that they are a nonprofit organization is still there.
It's the number one thing that's listed in every, very first, nonprofit or charitable status. And that would always need to be the case unless, of course, it's for youth athlete or youth travel or elite athlete, because those are individual grants.
No other questions? Councillor Oiko, would you like to put that motion on the floor, please?
Certainly. Just making sure I have it here. So there are two. Do you want me to do
the
both of them?
The first one, please.
Just the first one. That the policy and strategy, the chair and members of the policy and strategy committee, I move that the policy and strategy committee recommends to municipal council that council approves the proposed amendments to modal policy 043 community grant program as presented, and thereby give 7 days notice of its intention to approve the proposed amendments at the March 28th, 2003 council meeting, and I so move.
Seconder? Councillor Vino, is there any discussion on the motion? Should we correct the date as 2023?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. 2003. All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. We'll go to 9.5.2, and it's river. Oh, sorry,
no,
9.5.1.
And if we could just go back, I apologize.
Second
now
motion.
Now that you've entertained that recommendation from staff, I'd like to propose a second recommendation. Our annual operating and our major recreation capital grants have always deadline has always been March the 1st. I'm making a recommendation for this year only, for us to be able to extend that deadline to April 28th to capture some of those groups that may not have applied because of the ineligible criteria, and now if this gets passed at March 28th, would be eligible. So I guess I'm trying to be thoughtful of those groups and not miss the opportunity for this funding year.
Do we have any questions? Okay. I'll ask Councillor Moore to put that motion on the floor.
To the chair and members of the Policy Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy Strategy Committee recommends to council, Municipal Council that Council approves the extension of the deadline for the annual operating and major recreation capital grant to April 28, 2023 for this fiscal year only. And I so move.
Seconder? Councillor Greek? Discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. Now we'll move to 9.5.2, which is a report in District Community Park Association Management Agreement, and that's also Trudy.
Thank you. So if Council recalls that the March, there was a presentation made by the Riverport and District Community Park Association at the March 14th, 2023 Council meeting. And they had several requests presented to council at that day. One was to make a commitment via motion that the former school, which is the Riverport School grounds, which is around approximately 8 acres, be kept for community use as per community feedback, that MODL council provide funding for the design work and for the basic operational cost to run the park and the association, and that MODL provide long-term support to develop a park on the former school grounds. So I know one of the four strategic priorities of council is to recreate parks, which is about investing in our current parks to meet established standards that we're hoping to bring forth to council for approval in the very near future, and to make our parks more accessible. So council's direction has been, and I understand continues to be, that we are not creating new parks until we have addressed the current needs of our current parks. Although the former Riverport and District Elementary School grounds did provide a recreation space in that area in Riverport, it was not a space that was created by MODL, but because of the school closure, it did become an asset or a property of MODL. There was definitely a little soccer field. There was playground space and some other amenities. The playground did not meet CSA standards from a playground perspective, and the decision was made at that time to remove it. So to respond to the Riverport and District Community Parks Association and the community's request to and to address the direction of council, which is to focus on investing in the parks that MODL currently owns and manages, staff are recommending that council consider entering into a 5-year management agreement with the Park Association, and that this management agreement would have certain clauses that clearly state that MODL would not include any ongoing line item in their operating or capital budgets that would guarantee funding for the park concept plan, for any capital costs incurred to develop the park, or any ongoing operating cost. This recommendation would enable the Park Association to move forward with their fundraising and in seeking grants to achieve their goal of a community park. This recommendation would also enable the municipality itself to address your own strategic goal, which is investing in your own parks that are owned and managed by MODL. This recommendation would not preclude the Park Association from applying for any grants, which is that grant program that I just presented in my last report, from applying for any of that funding, because that would be open to any other nonprofit group that it's out there. There would be no budget implications if you entered into this management agreement. So it does align, in staff's opinion, with the strategic plan, again, about being partners and collaborative supporters of community groups. So this, I guess, staff's recommendation was trying to balance the strategic direction of council and the community request from the Riverport and Area Playground Association and the feedback that they had received from their survey that they had sent out to a number of their, and had like a 46, I think, percent, if my memory serves me right, in their community meetings. I'll open it to questions.
Okay, Mayor Bulwer-Getson.
Thank you. And I guess this proposal that's before us is exactly what Mr. Amos, I believe, was asking for when he made his presentation, asking for at least the use of the school lands to do that. And I do support this. It will give the organization they have formed the opportunity to go out and fundraise to see if they do have the community support to move forward. It was discussed at our last meeting that we do have one community park that has been returned to the municipality. We definitely want to make sure that this is a viable organization and that they're able to generate the funds to operate the park and move forward. Again, I understand why that would be difficult to go out to the community and ask for money or to try to raise money for something that you do not physically have a commitment to move forward on. So from that perspective, it gives 5 years for that to happen, and I think that the community will be happy to see this.
Absolutely. Any other questions? Councillor Staton? Oh,
Thank you. Just a comment. Because they are going to be given, or hopefully be given, control of this piece of land, that means that they are, when you say there's no budget line item, that means they are still eligible for capital and operating grants, or maintenance grants. Am I assuming that right?
That's correct. So currently with our other management agreements, they're line items. So, for example, when Pine Grove Outdoor Play Park, it was in line. We would go to the organization. They would give us a budget. What was your request? I would put that as part of the budget, and then council would determine whether they would give that. So it was a line item in our regular budget. They didn't go through a granting system, the granting process, and that was intentional because the land was owned at the end of the day by the municipality, so it was viewed a little bit differently. So what we're proposing here is that we'll enter into a management agreement, but for all intents and purposes, you will be treated different from any other management agreement we have in place with any of our other groups, but it doesn't preclude you from applying to our annual operating grant. It doesn't preclude you from the major recreation grant. It doesn't preclude you from applying for a program grant. There would be a nonprofit association just like the mass number of majority that we have in the municipality that's eligible to apply. So we treated them, we were treating our management agreements a little bit differently because they were, in essence, managing property on our behalf.
So the requirement of 25% of what they're asking for is still there on the other grants? Under these grants, they have to provide 25% and they get 75%? Is that still a part of the application process?
That's correct. So I'm going by memory. I don't have the grant policy here in front of me. But, for example, I think the major recreation capital grant might be 50% funding up to a maximum of 15%. So up to a maximum of $15,000. Some are 75%, some are 50%, depending on the grant application. But absolutely, if their annual operate, I'll use an example, if they are coming with a capital request and it's a $30,000 capital project, they could ask for up to $15,000. That council would need to determine whether they would give the full $15,000. But if they were coming forth with a park design and the capital costs were going to be $150,000, the maximum they could apply for is $15,000. So there is a percentage, but there's also a ceiling. So it wouldn't preclude them. Absolutely. That's what we're recommending.
Councillor Haysom?
Thank you. And I think Trudy mostly just answered this question. But I suppose, over the course of 5 years, let's say 4 years into this agreement, this group comes back and they found significant community funding, they found other funding sources, and then they come and ask us for something above and beyond. Is it something that we can revisit if necessary?
I would say that is always council's option to do so. I guess what I remember the mayor when I first brought the amended grant policy was wanting to make it very clear that if there was any groups that fell outside of any of these grant criteria that or categories that we didn't have, they could always write a letter and I'd bring that special request to council. This would be the same case if it was year four and the group said, look, this is, I would always say it's your right as a nonprofit group and as public members to be able to come and make a presentation to council, and at the end of the day, it would be you folks around the table that would be making the final decision.
Councillor Eichel, go ahead.
So I just have questions on, so will this allow them, so they'll be responsible for mowing the grass if they want the grass mowed?
Absolutely.
And if they want to plant trees, they'll be allowed freely to plant trees, have a community garden, flower beds. Are they allowed to do all that?
So that's why, if you note in my motion, it says not limited to. So typically, one of the clauses that we put in a management agreement is that they have to bring forth what they plan to do, the concept plan. And so council gets the decision to say, yeah, we agree with what you're installing or not. I think one of the lessons that we've learned in having management agreements is when council looks at a concept plan, they do have to think about the risk if the park comes back to us. And if it comes back to us, how much maintenance would it take? What I heard from this group, and whether that's what they present at the end of the day, they're looking at high impact, low maintenance, a park development. So if they come in, and I know this is a bad example, but if they come in with a concept plan to install a water slide, you know, have a big building that has to be maintained, you know, I would be cautioning the municipality around, well, if you approve that concept plan and they go ahead and build, if you know that it comes back to you, you're going to have to make a decision whether you're going to continue to maintain this. So that's why it would be in the clause that you have to approve the concept plan, because you don't want them building something on your property that you have no idea what they're building, because there's still a risk and there's a liability, because at the end of the day, we still own the property.
Thank you. Go ahead, Councillor.
And also, what about liability insurance?
Yes, that's another clause. Maybe I should have brought the draft, a draft management agreement. But we do have a template, and certainly we ask for a level of liability and insurance that they have, and we always reach out to our own insurer, which I've done some preliminaries with our own insurer around if this park was to develop, would they need to be carrying $2 million, $5 million? What would be the liability that they need to carry to help minimize the municipality's risk if there was a lawsuit?
Mayor Bulliver-Getson?
Also, we're only considering grants within the municipality. This organization will be able to apply because they have this agreement to the province, to the federal government, for different grants that may be out there for playground or whatever they choose to do with this property. So there's other funding opportunities besides just the municipality as well.
Yes, and they would also be eligible, if I could, to come to council if they want it to fall under that designated community fund. So another tool that doesn't cost us any money per se, but would help them fundraise.
I will ask Councillor Wynot if he'll put that motion on the floor, please.
Thank you, Trudy. To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends the Municipal Council that Council enter into a 5-year management agreement with the Riverport and District Community Park Association for the purposes of establishing a park for community use on PID numbers 604-565-06 and 601-93802, and further that the agreement will include, but not be limited to, the following conditions. First one, the agreement will be for a 5-year term with review period by year 5. And number 2, there will be no financial commitment by the municipality for the concept plan, capital costs, or ongoing operating costs. And number 3, there is no guarantee of any financial assistance from the municipality, which does not preclude the association from applying for municipal funds through its grant program. And I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Vino. Is there discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. Okay, so now we'll move down to the added items. 11.1, the Crescent Beach development, and Tom McEwen will take us through.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So I wanted to take the opportunity today to present some information to Council on the development at Crescent Beach, which has recently made its way into both social media and mainstream media. And I'm putting it forward as an example of what's being allowed to take place because the province has delayed the adoption of the Coastal Protection Act and regulations. So the development that's taking place is on 3 PIDs. It's on George's Island Lane in the Crescent Beach area. It is a series of cottages that are being built on the 3 sites. The landowner has prepared a professional engineering team to prepare the preliminary site plan, which has been submitted. The owner has applied for building permits. through their professional engineering firm. Those are being reviewed, have been issued and are being reviewed by our building inspectors. The site also demonstrates the multiple jurisdictions that take place on rural development. And I think it's important for council and the public to appreciate the different roles that the different levels of government play. I know that it's common for residents to place their displeasure at development squarely in the lap of council members, primarily because municipal government is the form of government closest to the residents. But in situations like this, our role is really limited to issuing the building permits and ensuring that the structures are in compliance with the Nova Scotia Building Code. In this particular instance, as with most rural development, septic approval is granted by the Department of Environment. So our building inspectors will confirm that the septic field is located on the property. But the approval process itself takes place through the Department of Environment. In this instance, I understand that there was a rock wall put in place. So again, this is not the jurisdiction of the municipality. The placement of bank or shoreline protection is in the jurisdiction of the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables. And so if the rock wall is at the high water mark, then it is the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables that issues the permit, not the municipality. If that permit hasn't been issued, then that is an enforcement issue for the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables, not the municipality. We also have heard, but I'm not able to confirm, that there's been suggestion of wetland alteration. So again, any wetland alteration that takes place is in the jurisdiction of the province, and in particular, the Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change Department. It is not in the jurisdiction of the municipality. I have reviewed the Nova Scotia Wetland Conservation Policy, and I see that approval is not required to alter wetlands that are less than 100 square meters in total area. That is a provincial decision, not a municipal decision. The determination on whether a wetland alteration application approval is required is determined by the Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change Inspectors. It is not a decision of our building officials. So, keeping all that in mind, this development is an example of a situation which would have been impacted if the Coastal Protection Act and regulations were enforced, as the lands would likely fall within the boundary of the Coastal Protection Zone. So just a little history on the Coastal Protection Act. So the province has established the Coastal Protection Act to protect natural ecosystems and make sure new homes and businesses are safer from sea level rise, coastal flooding, and coastal erosion. The Coastal Protection Act was passed in 2019, but the legislation provides it will only take effect once the regulations are fully developed and approved. So the Act itself was approved 3 years ago. The Act creates, once it's in effect, creates a coastal protection zone. So when the Coastal Protection Act and regulations come into effect, a new coastal protection zone will be created, and it will extend around the coast of Nova Scotia. The coastal protection zone is described as a narrow band surrounding the province's coast, including land and water-covered areas on either side of the high water mark. And it's within this zone where the regulations will apply. The coastal protection zone boundaries will be identified using the high water mark, which may be set out in regulations as the ordinary high water mark or similar reference line approximating water levels at high tide. The area that starts at the high water mark and extends inland in most cases will be called the upland area of the zone. The width of the upland area has not been finalized, but government is proposing it be in the range of 80 to 100 meters. So again, it's a decision that the government has to make, which hasn't been made yet. Within the coastal protection zone, municipalities will need to ensure building permits and construction are compliant with the two new setbacks: the minimum building elevation for different regions of the coast and a horizontal building setback determined for the specific property by a designated professional as defined under the regulations. So the role of the municipalities under the Coastal Protection Act and regulations, once imposed, provides us with two new areas where we will have to inspect, and those relate directly to the minimum building elevation and the horizontal building setback as determined by the regulations. So there is a downloading of some of the inspection service to our building officials, but until the Act and the regulations are imposed, it does not exist, and we have no role to play in the coastal protection, particularly because we are not a zoned municipality. The area of Crescent Beach is not zoned, and Crescent Beach itself is not a designated beach under the Beaches Act. So for the areas that start at the high water mark and extend seaward, the coastal protection zone boundary will not be specified. Within this zone, regulations will apply to wharfs, jetties, seawalls, infilling, shoreline armoring, and similar structures, and will be administered using existing permitting processes administered by the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables. So as is currently the case, where shoreline protection that's at the high water mark is done through a permitting process through the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables, when the regulations are approved and the Act comes into effect, that same permitting process will be applied to things like armor rock and shoreline protection. Again, a provincial jurisdiction that is not regulated or enforced by the municipality. Moving on to the Coastal Protection Act regulations, the regulations once adopted will create protections for sensitive coastal ecosystems and make sure construction is at a safer height and distance from coastal shorelines. The regulations will also provide detailed and clear rules for what can be built on our coast and where. Regulations will improve protection from sea level rise and coastal erosion by establishing setbacks that will apply to municipal building permits to ensure greater future protection for those structures. Regulations are also intended to ensure that any construction, such as wharves, boat ramps, shoreline armoring, and other structures, do not unnecessarily interfere with the dynamic nature of the coast and sensitive coastal ecosystems by creating new restrictions for existing permitting processes for the Department of Natural Resources and Renewables. So the action that I'm recommending the municipality take is as follows. Taking into consideration that the Coastal Protection Act was passed in 2019, and taking into consideration that the proposed Coastal Protection Act regulations, together with the overview of proposed Coastal Protection Act regulations and a detailed guide to the proposed Coastal Protection Act regulations, were released in July of 21. And as the Coastal Protection Act regulations, What We Heard report was published in March of 22, my recommendation is that council write a letter, or the mayor write a letter to the province requesting that the Coastal Protection Act and its regulations be approved immediately so that the coast can be protected in the way that it was intended when the legislation was passed 3 years ago. The delay in approving and adopting the Coastal Protection Act regulations allows property owners to continue to develop coastal property without regard for the protections and limitations contained in the proposed Coastal Protection Act regulations. I would also point out that the Act itself provides that if a landowner has an existing permit for a project, they can proceed with that project even if the Coastal Protection Act and regulations are passed. And so in the next item, we'll address how we suggest the municipality deals with outstanding building permits. So that is, in a summary form, what's happening at Crescent Beach, how that's an example of things that could be impacted had the province moved more quickly in adopting the Coastal Protection Act and the regulations, and that it's time for the municipality to write to the province and demand that the Coastal Protection Act... I'm naturally a polite person. So that the Coastal Protection Act regulations can be adopted by order in council, it will become effective, and it will allow for the municipality to enforce the regulations that were approved by the province along the coast as was intended.
Councillor Bell?
Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments. I'd like to ask the question, and then if you are ready, I'd like to propose a motion based on the discussion. my first comment is that in the past several days, I have seen and felt the concerns by many residences on what they have seen as a lifetime beach suddenly altered substantially. I posted a picture of this rock wall. I visit that beach probably 3 times a week to walk my dog. And I didn't realize that this was taking place until some people on the beach said, "Are you going over to see the mess?" And still went by 2 times because it didn't figure in. They never said what the mess was. So I walked to the end of the beach, and I didn't see anything. And then I start asking questions the next time someone mentioned something to me. So I went over and took some pictures. And some of the rocks in that wall is bigger than an SUV and a half-ton truck that is there picking up seaweed. And I was a bit shocked at what had taken place. And so I knew that the municipality would not issue permits for a rock wall like that. But by the very fact that I was on the beach, somebody recognized me and came over, and I became a target because they thought I was there inspecting the great wall that the municipality had built. And I quickly pointed out to them that this is as much a shock to me as it is them. And I did endeavor to ask questions to find out how this transpired. So this is my comment section. It's over. Lots of people had comments to me, but I won't share them. The next thing is, I understood that, and which has been announced today, that it is a building project that will see cottages built. The thing is, when the municipality is asked for a building permit, at this point, the land was altered, there was a wall built, there was some infilling, which I don't know. I haven't got the answers to that one yet. But when it comes to issuing the building permit, we are put in a position where the municipality has to issue that building permit because we have no reason not to, after it met 2 other provincial permits that were required. And the main one is the environmental permit for a septic tank. So I want to ask publicly to get an answer publicly that if we are put in a position to be asked for a building permit, do we have the right to turn it down? I already know the answer, but a lot of people don't understand that. And this is a key component, which I think the public has to understand. So whoever wants to answer it.
I don't see anyone else jumping up. So if a building permit is applied for and it's an unzoned area, then the building permit will be issued, provided that it meets all the qualifications. There's an application form that's completed. There's a fee that's paid. The building officials, they will ensure that the septic is on the property, because septic fields can't go across boundary lines. But that's the extent of what we have to review. So the building, we will ensure, is built to the Nova Scotia Building Code, which is it's an adoption of the National Building Code. We will help the developer in any way that's possible in leading them to the other jurisdictions that are necessary for things like wetland alteration, septic, if they need shoreline protection,
If they need public works for transportation approval for driveways for private residents or commercial. That assistance is provided to the residents as a means of helping them move their project forward. But our jurisdiction is for the building inspection, and so that's what we focus on.
Thank you. And I think that that is a key component that many people don't understand. We are fulfilling a service that we're obligated to provide once it meets the guidelines within that building permit. So this brings me to the point of a motion, if the chair is willing to accept a motion, I would like to present one.
Should we move to other speakers first and then come back to the motion? Is that okay?
It would allow speaking if the motion came to the floor.
Okay.
It doesn't restrict them.
Okay. Go ahead.
To the chair, Deputy Mayor Hubley, and members of Policy Strategy Committee, I move the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council direct the Mayor to send correspondence to the provincial government, i.e. the Premier of Nova Scotia, and the ministers and members of the legislature, requesting...
Demanding.
I'm being polite.
We're not.
You can change my motion if you choose, but I'm trying to be as professional as I can under the circumstances, requesting that the province approve and adopt the Coastal Protection Act regulations immediately. End of motion.
Second? Sorry. Looking for a second.
I second
that
motion.
Councillor Moore?
I second that motion.
Oh. Okay. Seconded by Councillor Haysom. Is there discussion on the motion? And I have a list here that I'm going to go through, okay? So we have Mayor Balivergetson.
I'll start, but I'll probably come back. Yes, this is an issue that truly does not belong at our desks. This is a provincial issue. I understand that residents sometimes do not know what level of government is responsible for what areas of that. And they do reach out to municipal councils, and we need to be able to advise them as to what we are responsible for. This here from, again, the septic approval being Department of Environment to the issues, if they exist, around the backfilling. And I did visit the site yesterday. I drove into the beach area. I did not go on the property of the development whatsoever. And I did look at what was happening here. That rock wall had to be permitted. It had to be permitted by Department of Natural Resources. It is not something that we do permit. We do not permit septic systems. That day is long gone from our desks. And again, if it's wetland altercations or whatever, it would have to be Department of Environment. So there are provincial jurisdictions that are responsible. I also know that social media can definitely take things in whatever direction people choose to take them in. But I guess the information needs to be clarified on social media, who is responsible for what. Because slamming the municipality for issuing permits that we do not do, we need to send that message out. We did not do this. If they meet the criteria for a building permit, then yes, we issue a building permit. That's after they have all other permits in place that they are required to do. No different than it is for any building permit. This here definitely needs to go back to the province. The province has the Coastal Protection Act that has been passed since 2019 that they can implement the regulations for. I believe the minister has gone on record as saying that they would be implemented in this sitting of the legislature. Well, the legislature is sitting now. And I know demand is a strong word, but it's almost to that point that we do need these regulations passed. Will it stop what's happening here? No, it won't. No, it won't, because this is another development that has already happened. Likewise, we go back to the Cherry Hill with the park there, and again, there was a discrepancy between the repealing of the Tourist Accommodation Act and the mandatory planning date that municipalities had. So we created a gap in between, which is allowing for these things. We need to make sure that these things are well thought out and that the regulations are put in place so that we can have the coastal protection that our residents are asking for and that they've had for many years, or they thought they have had. It's been the increase in the development in our municipality and, I guess, our hidden secret of Lunenburg County as a whole. People are choosing to live here, work, and raise a family. And again, that's what we want them to do. But we also need to do it in a manner that doesn't jeopardize all of our natural assets that we have in this municipality.
Thank you. Councillor Haysom.
Thank you very much. And I do have a few comments and also a question. I think it's... You know, I'm joining this meeting virtually, and I have spent the majority of my family vacation fielding emails and messages about this development. And I know that Lunenburg County has become a destination for people to make their homes and raise their families, and that's a wonderful thing. However, Lunenburg County, and specifically District 1, has also become a destination for people to monetize our coastal areas. And what we have seen here goes against some of the givens that we as a community, as a society in Nova Scotia, hold to be true. And that high water mark has been sacred for a long time. And if you see the pictures that are posted of this wall, the water is flush up against this wall at high tide. And I will tell you that it only takes one big storm for it to be wiped out. When I think of the work that's gone on by groups like Friends of Crest Beach, who have years and years of volunteer time to build up the dunes on this beach and protect it for all the people who use it year-round, to then see sections of that coastline absolutely destroyed by someone who's been given permission by the province, we have a pretty significant problem. And I think that the problem is the interpretation of the legislation and regulations that is currently in place. They must be inherently flawed if something like this is allowed to proceed. And so I am 100% in support of writing a letter demanding that the Coastal Protection Act be implemented as soon as possible. People have been waiting for this for a very long time. But my question and my concern, I suppose, is if we are then presented with a building permit request, what obligations do we have as a municipality, knowing that we previously had flood mitigation plans in place that would have prevented development this close to the coast? If you can see that this rock wall has the high tide lapping up against it, is it wise or what effect does it give our credibility if we begin issuing building permits in that location? And so I need to understand what our obligation is and also what room there is for us to say a building permit in this location doesn't make sense. And is there a mechanism for us to do so? Because I will tell you that aside from social media, where people can get pretty worked up pretty quickly, if you take a look at what's happening there, it is devastating for the natural environment. So are there any mechanisms for us to exercise some of that common sense that the provincial government has failed to do to address that building permit issue, since that is what is under our jurisdiction?
Thank you, Councillor. So I'll comment, and then I'll have the Director of Planning comment. So Under the Coastal Protection Act and regulations inside the Coastal Protection Zone, once it's adopted, we will have to abide by the minimum building elevation and the horizontal building setbacks when we're considering whether to issue a building permit. So until those are set, we don't have any guideline from the province on what we should follow. We can, through MODL 2040, put in setbacks, but we can't put in setbacks that are less than what will be adopted by the province. So part of what we'll be doing is with MODL 2040 is looking at whether the whether MODL will go farther than the limitations that are contained in the Coastal Protection Act and its regulations, because we can be more stringent, but we can't be less stringent. But currently, in an unzoned area, and which is most of MODL, and certainly I think most of District 1, we don't have any limitations or restrictions that we have to follow when it comes to considering whether or not to issue a building permit. But I'll pass it over to the Director of Planning.
No, well said, Tom. That's, I don't have anything else to add to that.
Okay, if I could just follow up. If I understand that the Coastal Protection Act will have those vertical and horizontal setbacks as a requirement, but if a building permit has already been issued and the Coastal Protection Act is not in place, does that mean that we can't enforce those requirements for a building permit? And this is my concern. And again, as the mayor said, this is absolutely lands at the feet of the province for not having this enacted, even though the legislation was passed in 2019. This loophole means that our hands are tied as well, even though we too have some goals around coastal flooding and that protection of property as well. So that's my next question. If that building permit is already in place, do those horizontal and vertical setbacks apply once the Coastal Protection Act is passed or enacted?
So the Act specifically provides that you can build under an existing building permit, even if it's prohibited under the Act once it's in force.
Okay, so my final question is, has a building permit been issued?
Yes.
Well, that is a huge failure on our part, and I'm very disappointed.
Yeah. So the challenge for the municipality is we have no grounds not to issue the building permit. We have no municipal land use planning. We have no setback requirements. The province has no setback requirements. So the property owners are acting within the provincial and municipal bylaws.
I would suggest that we do have common sense, but thank you.
Mayor Bellavergetson, did you want to weigh in here?
I guess my comment would be the building permit has been issued. What happens if council revokes the building permit? Has it ever happened, and is there precedent set?
So we
know that there are regulations out there somewhere. We have a minister on record as saying that he's going to implement them in this setting of the House. The spring, I believe, is what he has said. Does that, what happens if we were to revoke the building permit legally?
So I'm not aware of any legal authority that would allow council to revoke a building permit. The authority having jurisdiction under the Act is the building inspector, and the building inspector applying the law as it sits right now from both the provincial law and the municipal bylaw, there are no grounds to revoke, withdraw, or withhold a building permit.
Okay, we'll move to Councillor Moore.
I have a comment, and then I'm going to make an amendment to Councillor Bell's motion. My comment is I agree with everything that's being said here. Something that was passed in the legislature 2 years ago or whenever it was, and it's not enacted yet. It's very disappointing. My comment is I don't really get tagged in a lot of these posts. I see them on social media, but I think I'm too north of the 103 that I don't actually get emails or anything about it. My concern is what I do see on social media is that there is a public meeting being planned, and that's fine. Fine. People have the right to do this. But what's happening, and I think by just some of the comments made by Councillor Haysom, is that our staff are going to get the brunt and the blame at this public meeting unless someone is there to explain start to finish of how this actually did happen. Because I think the mindset right now is that it is our fault. And I would like to try to somehow make sure that it's relayed to this public meeting, which a lot of public meetings like this, once they're on social media, they can just become a witch hunt. And I'm hoping that it's explained that the municipality had no reason or obligation to not issue that building permit. Thank you. Oh, and I have an amendment. I would like to amend Councillor Bell's motion and replace the word request with demand.
So I have to ask Councillor,
it has to go to motion. So Councillor Bell would have to put that motion out there again. Councillor Moore.
Yeah, so I make the motion that we amend the original motion on the floor to replace the word request with demand.
Okay. And second by Councillor Oikle. Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Discussion on that motion? All those in favor? No. Oh, sorry. I am sorry. Councillor Bell?
My question is, can a lower level of government demand something of a higher level of government? I understand the emotion of it, and if the word demand is an emotional reflection, I would certainly support it. But if it was from a legal point of view, then I think it's worthless. So I understand. I want to be able to represent these citizens that are very concerned at the strongest level possible. So demand might be the better word, but from the legal point of view, what does it mean?
So I think from a very legal and technical perspective, the municipality is a subservient level of government. We can't demand require that the province do anything with any level of authority. We have no recourse if they don't. But as far as just the parlance, the use of language, I don't think it's necessarily offensive to use the word demand.
I could have used a stronger word.
Yeah. So if that's council's desire, I think it heightens the message, and maybe the reflecting a higher level of importance that council's placing on the action.
Mayor Balabergetson, you want to weigh in?
I want to weigh in, but I wanted to respond to the comments on the public meeting as well.
Or
so-called public
motion,
meeting,
though.
But this is this.
You have to pass the first.
Demand, I think that the conversation around demand is good. I think that that is exactly what we would like to see happen. I don't know if it helps or hinders in the motion when it goes to the province.
I would just like to weigh in there and say that I'd like to remain professional and request.
So we'll go to vote. All those on the amendment of the motion. Councillor Moore.
Well, I am professional. I've been professional for 19 years now, and I hope that continues. And as for a word that is an emotion that we have worked, and we have worked so hard, we have we've done the La Hayes River Straight Pipe, which we had the closing out of that today. We have protected the environment. And then all of a sudden, we are downloaded with a problem. And so when it comes to as far as I'm concerned, we are demanded by the province to do a lot of things, and I have no problem turning it around and demanding my coworkers at the province, which I respect, but they have to listen to us that this is a problem and it's getting worse. So I'm leaving the motion stand with the word demand.
Okay. So all those in favor of the amended motion? Okay, keep your hands
That's
up.
That's to keep it demand.
Councillor Haysom, are you in
favor?
I'm
in favor.
Okay. So we have Councillor Vino, Councillor Greek, Councillor Haysom, Councillor Moore, mm-hmm. and Councillor Oigle are in favor. All those opposed? Okay. We have Councillor Bell, myself, Mayor Bulliver-Getson, and Councillor Statton. What does that do? It's passed.
Lost?
Four. So it's passed.
It's passed?
Five.
Okay. So motion is passed. Correct?
I think you better count that again because there seems to be...
No, I think it was 5-4.
Well, I think you better ask for the show of hands.
But there's only 10 of us voting today. Is it a tie?
Reed is gone.
Oh, Reed's gone.
Mm-hmm. So it's passed.
So it is 10.
Motion.
You should actually ask for a show of hands again.
So we had Bell, Statton.
For the recording.
Myself, Mayor Bulliver-Getson.
And yourself.
Against. And
against. So that's 4 against.
So motion. Yes, so motion is passed.
The amendment is passed.
I'm sorry.
The amendment is
the
passed.
The amendment to the motion is passed. Thank you. Holy Toledo. Councillor Haysom, did you? I'm going to go to. Okay. So, Councillor Vino, did you have something to add?
I just wanted to share that although this is happening in District 1, my residents in District 10 have also contacted me on the weekend, and the message has always been the same. Why is MODL allowing this to happen? So I will be sharing with my residents to listen to this recording to get some more information that we found out here today. With regards to social media, I do try to stay on top of it and follow the comments, and it is taken off. But it's very concerning to hear our other members of government act as though they're shocked this has happened and that they're concerned, which gives the opinion that it is us. And
you're here. Yep.
And you know what? I will quote it. It's public.
Yep.
I am very concerned about the circumstances that allowed this to go ahead. Well, look the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to add that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor Bulliver-Getson?
I guess I wanted to go back to this public meeting because this public meeting to me...
We still have a main motion on the floor.
Yes, we do.
This was part of that discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Correct.
This public meeting that you spoke about, Councillor Moore, is definitely something that is advertised as a community meeting in Petite Revere from 3 to 6. That's it. That's what's advertised. To walk into that community without knowing what's happening is not a spot that I would like to see staff go. If we want to put a public message out, we do it in a professional manner, not in a community hall with misinformation that is being shared by individuals in the community. It definitely is not the municipality who issued these permits, and this is what is being shared. So this is not the case. We need to put it out the same as we would anything. If we feel that a public meeting is needed, then we will do that as a council, or I hope that we would do that as a council, and share that information. But we have a communication person, and it will be up to us to make sure that we get this information out, and if we have to pay for to get that information out, so be it, then that's what we need to do, to get it in the radio and to get it, because it seems that we struggle to get media's attention. So hopefully this will get media's attention and that the correct information can get out. Again, if there is anything that we can do And I will look to staff for those answers. I definitely would like to hear what it is at this point. We do not have that jurisdiction, we were told, to decline the building application. If I don't like a building being built somewhere, I just can't go to staff and say, decline that application. We know that there's regulations coming. We do not have a freeze on development. We actually discussed this as a full council back when we were talking about MODL 2040. We were given that option by staff that we could halt development in our municipality until we had our regulations in place. That means that there would be no development on side of us. There would be no housing developments. There wouldn't have been anything. You just can't say you can't have this development, is my understanding. If I'm wrong, correct me. But that is what we talked about, and we said that we wanted to move forward as a council. So for now to say that the comments that I'm hearing, I don't like that, because we made the decision. Not staff, we did, as a council, for MODL 2040. So please, this is not staff. If we want to revisit again things that already have building permits, already have the permitting, we cannot change. So let's look at our regulations that we have. If we're not happy with the direction we're going, then let's get it back on an agenda and revisit it. But keep in mind what we're doing when we do that, because we have a lot of residents looking for housing. I was at a variety show or a jam last night where an individual came up and said, can you find housing that we can afford to live in? And this is not an uncommon comment that I'm hearing throughout our municipality. And that is what we thought when we decided that we could not halt development in our area. So sometimes I go back to a statement of a counselor, be careful what you wish for, because you just may get it.
Councillor Haysom, do you have your hand?
I do. Thank you so much, Chair. And I just want to echo something that the mayor is saying, and it's something that I have requested in the past about the municipality making a statement when some of these issues come up, specifying that these things do not fall under our jurisdiction and that we don't have the means or the mechanisms to address the issue. It's really important that our residents hear and understand that. And so as regards a public meeting, I absolutely understand that concern about sending a staff person in to deal with people who are going to feel very, very emotional and upset about what's going on. However, I think that the municipality can make a statement about what's happening there because it is urgent and pressing, and it is front of mind for many, many residents. And I'd also just like to say, of course, we want to see the development of housing. I don't know if this qualifies. Thank you. And I would very much support having some kind of statement from the municipality about the limitations of our jurisdiction on this. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mayor Bob.
I guess just one thing that I did do this morning, I have reached out to both the local MLAs. I have received a call back from one, and I just received a text from another individual, so I believe that, yeah, we may be getting some attention.
That's good news. Councillor Oikel, did you want to?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure that we clarify the word building permit, because within the English language, words have multiple meanings, and that our building permit is for a building, not to build, such as building the wall, because people might think, well, we issued the building permit. Rather, do you understand what I'm getting at? Am I communicating? Clarification of the word that we issued a building permit for a building, not to build a wall. You understand?
Jeff Merrill, you'd like to weigh in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to just for the record, so about the moratorium, that wouldn't be just so we're clear, the municipality couldn't actually put the moratorium in place. We would have to request that from the province, and the province typically would only do that if it fell under one of their statements of provincial interest. So I just wanted to put that out there, that it's not the municipality that would be able to put
it. But did that not come to our original table?
Yeah, we originally had talked about whether or not we should make a request to the province to do a moratorium.
Yep. Thank you for that clarification.
Councillor Haysom, do you have another question? Is your hand still up? Okay, so we're going to... Yes.
Can we hear the main motion again, please, as amended?
Martin, can you repeat that motion, amended?
I can.
Sorry, Councillor Bell.
That the Policy Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council direct the Mayor to send correspondence to the provincial government, Premier, and all ministers demanding that the province approve and adopt the Coastal Protection Act regulations immediately.
Okay.
Is that right?
And
question on the motion.
Okay. All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Councillor Haysom. And against? Councillor Staton. So motion is passed with Councillor Staton opposed. Right? Okay. So we're going to move down to 11.2, which is the letter of outstanding builder permits.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So the next added item on the agenda, it involves a proposed letter that staff would like to send out to residents that have outstanding building permits. And as we discussed in the last item, the existence of outstanding building permits will have an impact on what residents are able to do on their property, particularly along the coast, because the Coastal Protection Act itself provides an exemption for residents that have existing permits. For Council's information, we have 2,457 outstanding building permits that have been identified that are all over 3 years old, so having been issued in 2020 or before, with no occupancy permit having been issued. This isn't the first time that we've addressed this issue through letters to try to get residents to act on outstanding building permits, but this is the largest scope of this type of project that we have proposed. One of the things that we would like to do is identify the building permit, the property, the address, and the project, or the type of work and structure that the building permit has been issued for, and give residents 90 days to contact our office to discuss their intention with respect to completing the project associated with the outstanding permit, and advise them that if they fail to contact our office within the prescribed time, which is 90 days, then the building permit will be revoked as per the Nova Scotia Building Code Act, Section 9, Sub 3, B and C. So we're not suggesting that the work has to be completed in 90 days. It's bringing to their attention that they've had an outstanding permit for more than 3 years, requiring that they contact us within 90 days to tell us what their intention is with respect to continuing the project. If those discussions take place and they say, we will have it completed, then the building permit can continue. We will monitor. If they fail to respond, or if they say they have no plans to do anything with it, then the building official, as the authority having jurisdiction, will exercise their authority and revoke the permit, and they'll have to reapply to move those projects forward. So it's generally operational in nature, but we've brought it to council because we think that this is something that council should be aware of. Council can have input on. We think the rationale for doing this is sound, and we think the timing is right, especially with the recent letter that council approved to send to the Premier and all ministers demanding that the Coastal Protection Act regulations be adopted immediately.
Okay, Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you. And I guess my comment, 90 days is definitely... probably okay in this case. I guess I just want to make sure that people have the opportunity. We have a lot of people in our communities that travel over the winter months, and I want to make sure that they are aware. And should this be registered mail, that we can confirm that someone has received the document on the other end?
Yes.
And
it'd be expensive.
$11.50. Well, I'm
what?
Per letter.
Yes.
Well, I guess I'm concerned of the individuals that will never receive the letter, for whatever reasons, and we do have that already in our system with other things, with tax bills that we get returned as well. We get a percentage of those back every year. I'm also, we definitely, do we have an expiry date now, and if you said it, I missed it, on our building permits, because it should mirror the direction that we're taking with this, because this is one thing right now that we're talking about, the Coastal Protection Act and so on. There may be many more down the road. So should there be an expiry date on a building permit, and do we have the authority to do that as our own permitting, or does that fall under the National Building Code or the provincial guidelines?
Go ahead, Jeff.
So, no, we don't currently have an expiration date on building permits, but I can say from staff level, yes, we should have a expiration date on building permits, and you know, our neighbors, you know, some of our neighbors have those in place as we move forward. So like the Coastal Protection Act, when that gets put in place, you know, that will have, there's things in there that, you know, we can't have a permit that's open for years and years upon end, whether it's the Coastal Protection Act changes or, say, the building code changes, you know, or land use planning regulations change. Like, we have to shorten those timelines on that. This is we're trying to clean up some of our outstanding permits before we get to the Coastal Protection Act being put in place, before we get to minimum mandatory planning.
And just supplementary, do we have the jurisdiction within
yes.
the... Okay.
Yes.
And the other question that just left me, that it'll come back to me.
Okay, then we will go. Well, you're trying. We'll go to Councillor Vino.
I should have asked the other one first.
Thank you. I'm in agreeance with many of the things the CEO had said, but there's one area that I just need clarification on. If they do contact us within that 90 days and say, "I'm only here a couple months in the summertime, I pick away at this project," how long is an extension good for? If they say, "I need another year and a half," will that be extended, or is there a time frame on the extension as outlined in one of the email exchanges that we had?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's the building official has some discretion there, so can discuss the project and issue extensions if they feel that extensions are appropriate. Now, those extensions would come with a timeline. We'd ask them, we'll issue a year, and, you know, if you're not done within a year, we'll revisit that. Because in a year time, maybe there's something else, you know, if the regulations have changed. But it you know, sending this out still allows the building official to work with the individuals and issue extensions, but they would look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. That's all the clarity I need.
Councillor Greek?
Thank you. I have two questions. I'm going to ask them both together so I don't forget, lose track of mine. One is, Mr. Merrill, you stated that there are 2,457 outstanding building permits. So if we're looking to have that many people contact us within 90 days, do we have the staff capacity to take that many calls and have that many discussions and visits if necessary? And my other question is, you had mentioned that other nearby places have expiry dates on their building permits. Are we not, haven't we recently switched over to sort of a regional building process? So is building permits for all of our region, are we working together to have similar building permits that, you know, if you're on this side of the line, there's no expiry date, but on that side, there is an expiry date, but the same person is doing all the inspections? Are we looking to kind of make it a little more the same, uniform? Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, so those are my two rambling questions. Thank you.
All right. I'll start with your last one because that's the one I remember. the building permits, the regional building services, yes, we're moving in that direction. And so the ultimate goal is to have that consistency for the individuals that develop and build things in our municipality or our neighbors, because it's the same people. It's a national and provincial building code, so it should be the same. But we need to amend our bylaw. So each municipality has their own bylaw, and one of the things that is on staff's plate is to bring some of those inconsistencies and change that. So right now we're trying to get the regional IT stuff geared up so we can move forward, but we will be bringing proposed amendments to our bylaws and policies in the future. And I'm sorry, and I forgot your first question.
It was the staff capacity, yes. For taking that many calls in 90 days.
Yeah, so right now and into April is the slowest time for the building season. So we want to, you know, now's the ideal time to get those letters out because we have, you know, the staff that can deal with those and do the inspections. I'll be shocked if we hear from 2,000 people. Like, we send this, most of these people have received multiple letters. So anything, if it was in 2020, they've received at least one letter. If it was 19, they've received two letters from us. And as we go back, like every year we send out letters and we typically do not hear from people at all. So these are we're trying to clean up some of this. So we won't hear from all 2,000 and so, but we will probably, you know, we'll probably be in the few hundreds that we'll have to deal with. And right now it is the slowest time for building inspection. So yes, we'll be able to get through it.
Okay. Councillor Staton?
Oh, I have so many questions. When I read the letter, I was taken back that we were told this is what was going to happen. And I thought, whoa, as a council, we didn't discuss the repercussions of what this letter might mean to us as a council getting calls from residents. And that concerned me. And then the 60 days, I'm thinking 60 days for 2,457 people to get back to council. Where's our staff capacity to deal with that? And if you have to do that many building inspections within 60 days, again, do we have the capacity of staff to do that? Those were my first concerns. I can see wanting to do this and clean it up. I understand that 100%. And I think we should, but I think we're being a little too aggressive in how we're trying to get it done. I'd say 6 months is probably more reasonable. Your letter says 60 days. Tom is saying 90 days, so I'm not sure which is the preferred method. But I would say if we took 6 months to let people, because a lot of people are out of the country that own these, I'm assuming these are all residential properties, but maybe I'm assuming wrong because we weren't told what kind of structures these might be, whether they're garages or outbuildings or whatever structure it might be that you're looking to have an occupancy permit for. I'm assuming you wouldn't want one for an outhouse, but you might want one for a garage. So I'm assuming houses and garages are what the thrust is, and that's a lot of occupancy permits to try to deal with in 60 days. The other, and a question I have is, what's the implication of canceling a building permit for a house or garage that's partially built does that mean that if your walls are up and your wiring's done and your plumbing's done, does that mean that you'd have to put holes in walls to have it reinspected for the plumbing and the wiring and all the other stuff? Because you're canceling, so you're not looking at what was already inspected to this point. You're canceling a permit, so you have to apply new. That means starting basically from scratch. I'm a little confused about how this process is going to pan out. And maybe someone can do some clarification. And when you drafted the letter, you must have had expectations of what it would mean to staff and to the general public who are in a house without a building permit, and all of a sudden the building permit's canceled. What does that mean if I have a mortgage that the bank has okayed, and I know normally the bank wants an occupancy permit to okay a mortgage, but things slip through the cracks? So there's repercussions here that I don't think we've given 100% thought to how they're going to pan out. And when I get a call from someone who has received this letter and they take it in the same vein that I took it in, I think we're going to have a lot more problems than we planned on. That's just my opinion from being around the public as much as I have been.
So, yeah, on the, if we've done inspections on the past and, you know, say somebody doesn't respond to us and we end up closing the file and they come back and be like, well, I've almost done you, like, we've done inspections. So we know what's there. Like, we don't have to go back and have them tear anything down if we've already done the inspections. As far as, like, the mortgage, it's the occupancy permit that they're looking for. And usually what happens for any of the structures is the builder, hire somebody to build the house. They got paid, and they're now gone, but they didn't call and get the final inspection. So a lot of the times, you know, it's just a matter of going back for those buildings and doing that final inspection, and we're able to issue the occupancy permit for that. And sometimes the people just, they didn't realize because it was the contractors in their agreement. It was the contractor that was responsible for that. But the contractor never, you know, sometimes doesn't always follow up on that last one. And these aren't all buildings. Like, these can be other things that, you know, we don't need to schedule an inspection for. It could be like a deck permit. And typically what we do with those deck permits is we, you know, put a bunch of them together, and when we're in the neighborhood, we just stop and double check that those have been finished.
Good. Yep. Mayor Balabrigetson.
So I have to come back with, I'm not sure if this is a direct blow to the head a few years ago or if this is a senior moment, but we're going to write it off to the direct blow. So anyway, the second part to my question was around developers, and we all know that people are sitting waiting for contractors, I guess not developers, but contractors, to finish up on their work and so on. So putting an expiration date there in the market that we have, we need to be careful. I guess if people indicate that they are continuing with their project, whatever, because I guess I'm looking at having a roof done on a building and they're telling me it's a 2-year wait to get a contractor to be able to do it. So we need to also be reflective of the market that we're in. So when we look at these, yes, I want to make sure that this isn't an abrupt letter that causes a lot of grief to our residents, but I also understand that we do need to clean these up to make sure that we're just not sitting on a permit so we have one for when whatever happens, happens with either whichever act is coming down.
And I'll say the building officials would be more than happy to hear from those folks and have that conversation. And as I mentioned previously, we'd be able to issue extensions. Yeah.
That's good to hear. Councillor Moore.
I agree with Mayor Bolivar-Getz, and what we just done was wrote a letter or made a motion for staff or council to write a letter to the province demanding that they enact their regulations along the coast. And what might happen or could happen is if we don't clean up some of these building permits or find out what's going on with them, once the act is approved, which hopefully they have listened to this tape, and the legislation doesn't set till 1 o'clock, so they had plenty of time to listen to the tape today. And what's going to happen is when they do enact what needs to be done, our outstanding building permits are going to allow people that have building land and plan on building along the coast, they're still going to be able to do it. And we're still going to get thrown under the bus. So we're going to be under the bus no matter what. So why don't we just clean up these building permits, find out where people have these building permits, where the land is, find out what they're doing with it, and if it takes extra staff time or another student program or something to come in and help do that, so be it.
Councilor Vino?
Just one more question. In the original email to council and to staff, it was mentioned that these letters would be going to applicants, but applicants can be different than owners because it can be the construction firm or company applying for the application. Can you confirm that where these letters are going? I worry that it might get lost in transition if it goes to Joe Smith's construction company and not the homeowner.
Yeah, sorry, that was just my language just for when I was typing it out. But this will go to the actual property owner. So if it ultimately is the property owner's responsibility, regardless of who applied for the building permit, and realizing that, you know, these are outstanding for a few years now, that there could be change of ownership, but it will go to the current property owner. Yes.
Okay, so do we have any other questions? Oh, sorry, Councillor Statton.
I do, because one of my questions wasn't answered. And if it was answered, I didn't quite understand the answer. And I'm asking, when you say that you will cancel a building permit that's already out there, so will the files be destroyed or eliminated? You indicated that there's been a number of inspections may be done and you carry on from there. But if the letter goes out saying that you're going to cancel the building permit and a new application has to go out, where does that leave the property owner? Is the letter going to be cleaned up enough that it doesn't say that? Or the letter was a bit harsh, in my opinion. It was a bit harsh and arbitrary. So I'd like to see a little softer language, and I'd also be willing to make a motion that it be extended to up to 6 months. I'm agreeing with cleaning it up, but with the market being what it is, labor and material and stuff being what it is, I think 60 or 90 days is not enough to be able to fix it and get that done.
So I'll carry this one because I have changed the letter.
Okay.
So the second paragraph of the letter will read, "This letter is to give you notice that we require you to contact our office to discuss your intention with respect to completing the project associated with the above noted outstanding permit within 90 days after the date of this letter." The third paragraph now reads, "Please note that if you fail to contact our office within the prescribed time, 90 days, then your building permit will be revoked as per the Building Code Act, Section 9, Sub 3, Sub B, Sub C." So it's not they have to complete the work. They have 90 days, and all they have to do is contact us and tell us what their intention is. And then our building officials will work with them to achieve what their intention is. So if they're going to continue the project, but they can't get a contractor for 2 years, then the building officials will exercise their discretion and work with them. If they tell us, "I applied for this, I have no intention of doing it," then we can revoke it. If they tell us, "I put a building permit in place because I knew that in 2019 the Coastal Protection Act was passed and it had a section that said, if I have an existing permit, I'm good," no. We're not going to let them hold those indefinitely. So we'll work with, as they always do, we'll work with the residents to ensure that those projects that can or should go forward continue, those projects that will be have been abandoned will be canceled. People that don't contact us will get the automatic revocation, but they can come back and apply. But we think that the 90 days is sufficient to get them to respond to us and start the communication. We anticipate that those people that take it seriously will contact us in April. A lot of people wait till the last minute and contact us in June. May is already the tax time, so they're getting a letter from us about their taxes anyway. So we think that the 90-day time frame will allow us sufficient time to make these contacts.
Thank you. I didn't see the second letter. All I saw was the first one. Oh, you just voted? Okay. Well, that's a little softer and a little more compliant, friendly than the
and
first
one. Soft and friendly is not normally how I write, but yeah.
Well, I'm
but
not
I changed
always
this
soft
one.
And friendly either, but I understand
yeah, I
that sometimes when you're dealing with the public and their place they live in, you need to be a little more conscious of what you're doing to them.
Mayor Balbriggetson.
And I guess in light of the 2,400 and some?
2,457.
2,457 phone calls that we're about to receive, and I know how quick our lines get flooded here. Are we going to have a designated line for this and someone to man it? Because as soon as that resident cannot get through and only get a voicemail or it gets bumped or it goes somewhere, they're going to be reaching out to each individual counselor to make sure that their message was received. So it may not be a registered letter, but is there some mechanism that at least we can ensure that they're speaking to someone or they're getting a body and they're not getting frustrated on the other end?
Yeah, that's a good point. We can, I think, work with the admin department and kind of maybe think about rejigging the options for a short period of time, maybe, that talks about if you're... Well, it's coming to the building line. But we can have a... We can look at the voice message, so if somebody doesn't pick the phone up when it rings, that they have a message that talks about the letter quickly.
And there's also an email option.
And it is manned 5 days a week, correct?
Alex, you want to weigh in here? Go ahead.
Just to add to Jeff's comment, part of the importance of the timing was not just around when the building inspectors are less busy, but avoiding tax season. So that's why we were pushing to have that done, because we want to make sure that when we get to May and we have a larger volume of calls from the public. We also... have been monitoring since we switched to the model where we have all of the front desk staff reporting in corporate services. We've been monitoring how many calls go to voicemail and how quick we are able to get back to them. And we've gave council an update on that. We've been able to maintain that level, but we monitor that regularly to make sure that we're not dipping below what we expect in terms of being able to do that. And we would certainly be doing that while these letters were out.
I'm afraid to ask. Are there any more questions, comments? Okay. That takes us to the end of the agenda. I would like a motion for adjournment. There's no in camera. Okay.
It's just direction to staff, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But I think they have that.
Yeah.
Correct? Right. Okay. So a motion for adjournment. Councillor Oikle, seconder by... We need a seconder from Councillor Vino. All those in favor, meeting's adjourned.